First thing was that I lived for a year in Africa in 2007, and for me that was probably had the biggest impact on my life of any experience I ever had. I lived in Arusha in Tanzania, and during the time I was there, I had an opportunity to visit the Democratic Republic of Congo, which has the highest incidence of child soldiers in the world, and also to visit Kibera slum in Kenya, which is also one of the most densely populated shanty towns in the world. And during my time there, I suppose in meeting people, in hearing about people's stories, and also in talking to people who'd worked directly with child soldiers, I began to read more about it. And I suppose there was something about the topic that just touched me in a deep and profound way, because I think child soldiering for everybody, they're just two words that should never go together in a sentence, child and soldier. And I think there's something for most people about this topic that it's just so wrong. It's something that almost cries out to God, you know, for action and for change. And starting then from my experience of reading, talking to people, became more and more interested in this area. And because I'd lived in Africa for the year, I'd learned Swahili. So I was able, I had the skills, the language skills, to be able to implement interventions. And it just so happened that when I arrived in Queens, the college was particularly supportive. Our professor at the time was really, really keen that we get involved in this area, and he said there was also someone else on the course who had lived in Africa too, another guy. And I think the university, when they looked at the two of us, we were perhaps slightly older as students on the course, and there's two men interested in getting involved in this area, and they said, well okay, we'll support you and we'll do everything that we can to help you.
So just talk to us about you got involved, you know, in the sense of you went into the course in Queens, you went then to out to Africa, and when was that? When did that happen?
So in 2010, I went to a school called Laro Boarding School, which is in northern Uganda, in a town called Gulu. And this school is like it's like no other school I've ever worked in before. Now, my background is teaching, so I've taught in a lot of different schools, and I've taught abroad as well. But this school was quite amazing. It's one of the only schools in the world, the only secondary school in the world, where all of the students in the school were former child soldiers.
So you're in the school in northern Uganda, and you know, it's obviously specifically set up to help and rescue children, is it?
Yeah, it was a joint project between the Belgian government and the Ugandan government. And it occurred at a time when there was a ceasefire between the Lord's Resistance Army and the Ugandan Defence Forces. And so they had a lot of children that were demobilized at this time. And so people felt the most important thing was that because they'd missed out on years and years of schooling as a result of being caught up in the conflict, the idea was to provide a place where they could receive an education, but also receive treatment and support. But if you can imagine, it was like a social psychology experiment that you'd never get any ethics committee to agree on, because you take the most traumatized children on the continent of Africa and you put them all together in the same place. And so you would have had in classrooms.
And is that having different cultures and different mix? Because obviously the diversity of cultures in Africa is massive, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. There would, I suppose most of the children would have been from similar tribe, but the big difference would have been that within the rebel group, they would have had very different ranks. So that for them was the difficulty, that you would have had, for example, a commander. So a young boy, maybe in his 16, 17, who had risen to the ranks of commander. And during the time in what they call in the bush, so in the rural areas, he would have tortured and abused some of the children who then would have been sitting beside him in class studying out of the same maths textbook. So when the school originally was founded, there was huge problems. Students, for example, got involved in very significant fights. There were assaults on teachers. Equipment got broken. But I remember one of the teachers in the school describing a fight that broke out, and the teachers went to intervene to stop it, and they couldn't. But one of the other child soldiers intervened, and he was able to do it. And the teacher said to me, well, the reason that they could was because they had this understanding among each other when they were working together. And there was a bond that developed among the children that was very, very powerful through their joint experiences of horror and violence in the bush.
Just, you mentioned as well there, most people wouldn't be aware of the Lord's Resistance Army, is that the correct term?
Mm-hmm.
But they would have heard of the Kony 2012 campaign. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. The Lord's Resistance Army was founded by a former altar boy and witch doctor called Joseph Kony. And Joseph Kony was, I suppose, very clever in that he was able to merge together religious animism, which was a traditional belief, together with Acholi patriotism, which was the tribe, Acholi tribe, the sense of wrongs and political wrongs that the tribe had experienced, together with a kind of a semblance or a veneer of Catholicism, and mix all of this together to create a kind of syncretic religion, which was both political and religious.
So it was a cult?
In effect, it was a political and religious cult, combining both factors together. And Kony saw himself as being divinely ordained by God to avenge, I suppose, the wrongs that his tribe had suffered. But the irony is that in their 25, 27 years of insurgency, despite wanting to be the Lord's resistance army, they've broken every single commandment that the Lord had established. There's a lot of, I suppose, contradictions with the Lord's resistance army. For example, they're not allowed to drink alcohol. And yet the victims will talk about witnessing them drinking human blood. So there's a complete perversion of the norms and a complete perversion of religious values to in order to control the minds of recruits who have been blooded into the organization.
And that's an initiation passage that the children are made go through, is it?
Yeah, the child soldiers that I worked with described what they called an initiation, which they called blooding the hands of new recruits. Looking at it from a psychological point of view, the Lord's Resistance Army used a lot of psychological techniques to desensitize the children that they had abducted to violence. So it was done on a scale. So the first action would never have been to kill somebody. First action might have been to participate, to witness a murder, and then participate, but never deal the final blow or the killing blow. And then eventually the children, slowly, bit by bit, were encouraged and in many cases then forced, if they didn't follow, to carry out particularly atrocious and heinous crimes. So